Hello, and welcome to the In Good Faith podcast, where two friends talk about society and culture through a Christian lens and in good faith. That is, we approach everything with charity and curiosity, and we aim to help our listeners do the same. My name is Chong, and with me on the other line is Dan Shi. How's it going, Dan?
Well, thanks. I'm a bit tired, maybe a little bit sleepy, but doing okay. We had a big day today, didn't we? How are you recovering from taking your whole family to the Easter show today? I'm pretty wiped.
Yeah, quite fortuitously, we saw each other earlier today. We took our respective families, well, me, my whole family, plus another cousin, I guess, and you just, yeah, it was a daddy-daughter day.
That's right. I just brought the one kid. The other one got stuck at daycare. I wasn't going to try to handle, yeah.
And I would like to say this, another one is on the way.
Evidently. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm very proud.
Breaking
happy
news.
To share. Yeah, that's right. if you've seen us, you would know by now, because I think, what is it, 7 months, only a couple of months left to go. So I would have officially caught up to you, Chong, in number of progeny.
Yes, and who knows what this will do to the regularity of a podcast, but that's not saying that much, is it?
No, we're not going there. We're not talking about that, okay? This podcast will live on, all right?
It's still alive.
But we're always around. That's right.
All right. How do you want to kick things off?
Well, we've got a pretty exciting subject. And as our listeners know, sometimes we don't always cover stuff that's going on in like cutting edge current events. Mm-hmm. But for this particular episode, we thought it would be a great opportunity to talk about something that everyone has probably been hearing about at least somewhat, and that's AI. So I thought I'd do the introduction, and then Chong, you could, this is your show. You could really take
a bit
of it. That's right. Now, a YouTube video that I was watching pretty recently said this. It was talking about technology, and it said, for most of our history, human technology consisted of, I guess you could say, roughly three categories: fire, sharp sticks, and our brains. So by fire, we mean we harness energy we need to cook and stay warm and, you know, light things by lighting things on fire. And by
lots of utility.
Yes, that's right. But generally speaking, that one represents creation or helping human life, right? Now, by sharp sticks, that's the opposite of it. So we sharpen sticks to kill each other with, right? And then the third one is our brains. We use our brains to solve problems. And so over time, as technology marched on, fire became power plants and sharp sticks became things like guided missiles and tanks and nuclear weapons. And in that light, what we want to talk about today is really the biggest upgrade, and it's the upgrade of that third category. And it is happening right now, and it's happening to our brains. And so to put the AI revolution into perspective, like we said, if the other tech was about either making our lives better or making us better at taking lives, now we're at seemingly the cusp of forever transforming how we think, how we reason, how we process the world, how we, you know, take in information and all that, right? And so basically something big is happening right now. It's happening fast. And it's hard to keep track of. It's almost like we're minute by minute, we're messing around with stuff that could alter the bedrock of human society, right? And so this isn't about taking life or making life better. It's actually fundamentally about changing what life is. And so to put it another way, in the 20th century, right, we've got the nuclear arms race that went along with the Cold War. Now, that was one kind of existential threat. It was the kind of threat that could blow you up, blow up everyone else that you know, all your loved ones, etc. It could kill you, make you have no body, right? But now what's happening in Silicon Valley and other tech centers around the world has the potential to forever change our understanding to what it even means to be a body. Like, what does it mean to be me? What does it mean to think, to reason? What does it mean to be a self? What does it mean to be human? And so with that hook and with that setting, Chong, why don't you kind of take it away from here and tell us what's been going on or in the scene?
Yeah, and so I think that for all of us, right, we're going to historically look back on probably 2022, you know, the second half of 2022 as this pivot moment, right, in technology, because that's when AI went mainstream, you know, artificial intelligence, or, you know, at least the practical applications of it, right? So some of our listeners may have come across like AI-generated art, you know, this generative AI. And so there was a few sort of models going around. So there's DALL-E, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, right? So there were just names for, yeah, like these large models that could create art from language prompts, right? And you can just give it like really, you know, any kind of description, you know, like make me a ginger cat, you know, in sunnies standing on the moon, and it's watching the earth rise, right? But also have a moody atmosphere and do it in the style of Vincent van Gogh, right? Just, and it'll just come up with like all these images that you know, serve that prompt. Right. So it's quite amazing. But that was for images. But I think the really sort of big deal is text, right? So ChatGPT is, I think everyone knows, has heard of it by now. And I think it's going to become that word that you instantly associate with something, right? Like how Google was like, you know, do a search, you know, or Kleenex, or whatever, right? Like there's certain brands that just like come to define that category.
Yeah.
And I think that's what ChatGPT is going to be, right? So it's a, you know, large language model, which I'll get into, right? That allows you to give it questions and prompts and things like that, and it'll give you, you know, responses, right? Yeah. Like in a very sort of human-like way, you know, which goes to the whole AI kind of stuff.
So it's the one that feels the most AI, right? Like we have examples of it on TV and movies. Like if you watch Marvel, you've got like Jarvis, like AI assistants in video games and things like that. And now ChatGPT almost kind of feels like we've achieved that thing, hasn't it?
Yes, and you literally just, you know, slap on, you know, like a voice, right? And it becomes Jarvis, right?
Yeah.
And so the thing that we want to do in this episode is to plant that flag. You know, I think in previous episodes, you know, of In Good Faith that we've done is like look at a topic and just, you know, plant our flag to say it's here, right? And this is, you know, what we make of it, right? And I think the thing to say is that, you know, not all of us are technologists, you know, not all of us are cutting edge, right? And following all of that. And I wouldn't count myself, you know, as kind of that either. I would say I'm kind of like a normie, like Dan, I think.
Kind of.
You're a normie as well.
Oh, I'm very squarely normie, I think.
Yeah. We're both normies, even though, you know, we have like an interest in tech and, you know, history, philosophy, whatever, right? But just to make people aware that it is a BFD, or, you know, a big effing deal, right? Like this, no, it's huge. And it's actually quite interesting because it's sort of like 1 year since we did our podcast on the Ukraine war. Right, and we're calling that a big deal too, you know, on like on the sort of historical geopolitical front, right? Yeah. You know, it's kind of foreshadowing a new era, or is it really sort of harkening back to a previous era, right? Like the whole end of history notion, right? And in a similar way, like AI or generative AI is foreshadowing a new technological age, right? Like a new disruption, right? In that way, so. Just as, you know, the printing press and the steam engine, the internet, you know, all those things were kind of groundbreaking in the past, right? And so, but the thing that, like, there's so much about AI that we're not going to cover, right? Or that we're not able to cover today. This is really more just to kind of explain what it is and what it could mean for our lives. There's all these other issues as well around, like, the ethics and problems of AI, right? That, like, we're not going to get into today. I just want to sort of put that up front, like, you know, there's going to be, there's all these issues like biases and the data and the training methods and like hallucinations when AI get things wrong, you know, the alignment problem. Like, Dan, have you heard of that term before?
Nah, that's beyond me.
Okay, so yeah, because you're a normie.
That's right.
So it's when, you know, it basically like thinking, you know, worst case scenario, right? Like if we do design something that's so intelligent, right? What if it starts to have its own agenda, right? Its own goals, right? And that diverges from the goals of its creators, you know, so it's misaligned, you know, in terms of like the values or the goals, right? And that's when, you know, AI, we can get to these sort of currently theoretical scenarios of, you know, AI doing really bad stuff, right? And that's the alignment problem. Then you have like stuff like privacy and copyright and, you know, the fact that you're training all this on all this corpus of data, right? And, you know, it could be artists, you know, work and, you know, books and, you know, journal articles and things, right? So there's all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I'm just going to briefly allude to.
Yeah.
But yeah, in this episode, we're going to cover what it is and what it could mean for us, right? And do you know Tyler Cowen? He's like a quite a famous sort of, you know, economist and academic and sort of popular writer.
Yeah.
And so he had a recent sort of post about AI, about how, you know, despite people sort of hand-wringing about, you know, all the possible risks, that, yeah, that we should embrace it, right? And so he goes, we should take the plunge. We already have taken the plunge. We've designed or tolerated our decentralized society so we could take the plunge. See you all on the other side.
I know we're going to get into it later, but that seems a little bit like defeatist, right? Like, or circular reasoning, right? Like, it's going to happen, so we should just do it. Like, but anyways, yo, we will talk more about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Okay, so let's get into it, and starting with, you know, AI, artificial intelligence. And Dan, I'm hoping that, you know, you'll add some spice and interest to this section, because a lot of it is just going to be me spitting out facts.
That's all right. And, I'm spicy and interesting. No problem.
and by that, I just, you know, just blatantly just ripping off other you know, summaries of AI, but that's okay.
Yeah, no worries.
So AI has been this term that's always kind of existed, you know, in the zeitgeist, you know, in our kind of popular understanding, right?
Yeah. Or,
you know, computers and what could happen in the future. So it was kind of coined in the mid sort of 20th century, and with this idea, I think it's not a far-fetched idea that, you know, computers or things that humans could create would do human-like things, mm-hmm. right? And we've had, like, you know, various movies and popular culture that already has that, right?
Well, it's a sci-fi staple, right? Since it's
Yes. Yeah. So reasoning, problem solving, learning new tasks, communicating in a natural language. But in terms of actually bringing that to fruition in reality, it's been kind of slow going until the 2010s. Mm-hmm. You know, so in 2012, the sort of the research field, you know, all kind of focused on this idea called the neural network, right? So it kind of sounds like this sort of brainy kind of thing, like neural network, but really it's you know, throwing a lot of data at the problem, you know? So, you know, like big data used to be a buzzword. I know if,
yep.
So in my line of work, you know, like back in the 2010s, but the idea that if you can have lots and lots of data, you can then be able to find, you know, statistical patterns in that data, right?
Yep.
And be able to work things out.
Yep.
And so then the next step, logical sort of extension of that is large language models, right? So around 2018, companies like Google, Microsoft, and OpenAI, they began to build their neural networks upon vast amounts of text, you know, mm-hmm. and they would get the text from the internet, you know, from Wikipedia, digital books, academic papers, right? And once you start building these networks and training them on the text, an interesting thing happens, right? They're discovering that the systems that they build can have learned to write in a way that's human-like, you know, and,
yeah.
You know, write prose, write computer code, carry out conversations, right? And so that gives rise to the term of generative AI. So this AI is actually generating new content.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, what was the sort of... a key ingredient to this was the fact that these AI were being fed loads of data, and it involves them getting massive amounts of, I suppose, bits and bytes from the internet, right?
Yeah.
So what they're learning, but it's not like they're learning from human society democratically. They're just learning from the internet, right? So I just wanted to note that. We'll probably get into that more later on.
Yeah, like, you know, the best and the worst and everything in between, right, all the internet. And so, you know, generative AI, as we mentioned in the intro, has come in sort of two forms so far, right? One is images, right? The generative images, and then language, right? And text in the form of ChatGPT. So I think ChatGPT is actually, you know, quite important to know about in all of this, right? And I'm sure that, you know, quite a few listeners may have already experimented with it themselves, right?
Actually,
but just, yeah.
I did. I think I told you this, but I just went to a wedding last weekend where the bridesmaids, they blatantly admitted that they wrote their speech using ChatGPT. So it's definitely like in the normie mind now.
Yeah, wow. Yep. All right, yes. So I do want to give a quick intro to how ChatGPT works for the people who, yeah, even though they might already be using this, you know, to compose their wedding speeches or, you know, emails to clients or whatever, right? Mm. It's useful to understand how it actually works. Mm. So there's a few steps to making something like ChatGPT, right? So step one is you have to set a goal. You know, so every kind of AI system, you need to define, like, what is it meant to do, right? And so, you know, in other contexts, it could be like, you know, win as many chess games as possible.
Right? Yeah.
Or in health, it's like trying to predict the three-dimensional shapes of proteins, right? You know, like all that kind of crazy stuff. But in large language models, it's the function, the goal is quite basic. It's given a sequence of text, what should come next,
yeah,
right? So, you know, which word or which sequence of words should follow another sequence of words? That's basically the goal of what they're trying to do.
So isn't that just basically, in other words, saying pretend to be a human or pretend to be a conversationalist? Like, that's what
pretty
it
much,
is. Like,
pretty much, yeah. Yes, yeah. And, you know, we can just get into it briefly now, but there's this whole debate, right? Like, you know, when ChatGPT first came along, and there were people who were sort of like just dismissing it. It's like, oh, you know, all that they're doing is just predicting the next line, right, or the next word.
Yeah.
And so, and therefore, like, the implication is somehow, you know, it's still not, you know, that human-like or, you know, it's still whatever, right, separate to us. But then another way to think about it is, like, isn't that what human brains do as well? You know, as we converse with each other, right, it's not like I'm just, like, powerfully, you know, shaping, like, exactly what I want to say. You know, I'm just kind of, the words are coming out of my mouth, right?
And yeah.
You know, coming through my brain. Mm. And it's based on what input you've given me, right? And I try to sort of just say stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So to what extent are they actually qualitatively that different?
Yeah. That does raise a bunch of philosophical questions, right? Like, like, is that actually intelligence? But like you said, we shouldn't get bogged down on it. Keep telling us how ChatGPT got formed.
Yeah, okay. So you have that, the function or the goal. Then next step, as we said before, is you collect loads of data, right? You scrape heaps of stuff on the internet, you know, you feed it proprietary stuff. But yeah, the goal, you know, if it's predicting text, obviously you want, you know, the most amount of text possible, right? Mm-hmm. Then you build your neural network, and there's a lot of, like, technical stuff that I'm not going to get into here. But then you want to train it, right? So basically, it's identifying patterns and relationships within the data, you know? So it might be that they notice, you know, dear is often followed by a name, you know, like, dear Dan, you know, I would like to blah, 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 right? Or best regards, you know, in an email, right? It means there's also... it comes before someone's name, right?
Yeah.
So they make these kind of correlations, and so it's, you know, building, like, a map of the human language, right? And because of the kinds of technology involved and just the amount of data, you know, you can have a lot of these relationships, you know, like hundreds of billions of parameters, right? Of you know, of what they think, you know, the linkages between words.
Yeah.
Right? So once you build that neural network, then you fine-tune it, right? And so this is where, like, the secret sauce, you know, or the things that, like, you know, OpenAI, you know, the people behind ChatGPT, right? They are also doing something to the model, right? Which is, like, obviously, you know, if you just create a whole bunch of stuff, you just spit out anything, right? Like garbage in, garbage out sort of idea, right? But you want to be able to then tell the model how it can improve, right? So they do this thing called reinforcement learning with human feedback, right. Or RLHF for short. But basically, it's like they'll give, you know, a prompt. So they'll, you know, I guess internally they'll have like this proto ChatGPT, right, where they'll give a prompt, they get answers back, and then that human can then vote up or down, right, on that answer. You know, so it's telling the model, you know, what is a good answer and what's a bad answer.
Right? And if it gives a good answer, ChatGPT gets like a cube of sugar or something like that.
Yes. Well, yeah, so then, you know, it's more likely, right? It's being rewarded, so it's more likely to give that type of answer.
Rewarded with likes. Yo, this is so meta. Like, ChatGPT is basically modeled after a Reddit user.
So, maybe. I don't know, Dan. I think,
sorry, go on.
This is us two normies trying to, yeah, explain it. Yeah. But yeah, but I think that the interesting thing here, right, is, you know, it is adding a human in the loop, right, in terms of sort of, you know, defining that, how it's been trained. But also, I think, interestingly, which, again, not enough time to get into, but just so that our listeners are aware, this is where you can also encode your own values into the model, right? Because, and right now already, you know, like Microsoft is trying to incorporate this because, you know, they're a big corporate behemoth, you know, they want to avoid any kind of controversies, right? So, If you ask the model anything about like race, sex, religion, you know, that kind of stuff, right? The model actually gets pretty politically correct, you know, or they'll just like, they'll just not answer the question, right? And that's not because they don't know how to answer it, because where they've been trained on, you know, the best and worst of humanity, right? They're able to give you an answer, but it might be that it's not the answer that, you know, sort of Silicon Valley elites want, want the models to tell people, right? But anyway, so there's that aspect of it. And then you launch it, you know. So, you know, ChatGPT is launched in, you know, there's a website, right, where you can create an account, you know, and then you can just get going, right, in a browser. Or, you know, you can already see these big companies like Google has its own version. Microsoft, they're trying to incorporate it into their own sort of products, right? And, you know, and that's how it rolls. And then it's, you know, it's really only been a couple of months, right, since this thing really sort of blew up. But already, yeah, it's there's been like just so much weird and wonderful stuff.
Yeah. So, I guess just one comment I had was, what's interesting, you've kind of just given us the step by step of how to build a ChatGPT, and the first step was the one that stood out to me: set a goal, right? And so I can't help, like, this whole thing, like, as a normie, I'm thinking, the obvious question is AI really intelligent? Is it really sentient? All that kind of thing. But humans don't have goals, right? We just, that's the thing. We exist and we create our own goals, I guess you could say. But to even start producing an artificial intelligence, you already need to set a goal, which I find kind of interesting. Just what does that mean, like, about whether it could actually truly exist as a sentient, intelligent, living thing?
Yes, and that gets to sort of the alignment problem, right? Or, you know, what if AI gets to a point where it's so smart, right, and it's so intelligent that it's setting its own goals, you know?
Right.
So it's not just like the goal that the human researcher, you know, creator set for them, right?
Yeah.
But they've sort of then decided, oh, you know, maybe the best way to sort of achieve this goal is through all these other means, right? Yeah. And all these other goals that come out of that initial goal. Mm-hmm. And that's when things go haywire.
Yeah.
But sort of just back to ChatGPT. So there's, you know, a few good uses already, and I'm kind of taking this from like a New York Times article, right? But even right now, you can do stuff like, you know, explain concepts to me, right? And, you know, explain... So example in the article is fractional reserve banking, right? Which I don't even know what that is, but, you know, explain it to me at a high school level, you know, or a middle school level, right? So, you know, you can get ChatGPT to sort of be your tutor in a way.
Yeah.
You can have it to be like an editor, right? So paste a few sentences and then ask it to sort of, evaluate, you know, your reasoning, right?
Yeah.
I think a pretty good one is just to get your creative juices flowing, you know, maybe like that wedding speech writer is like, hey, I just need to get something to get going, right?
Absolutely.
Of what I can say, or, you know, here are these 10, you know, interview questions, right, for your next interview. Or, you know, I'm starting a company and, you know, I want to like, give me some names, right? Like, for, you know, that, you know, based on my product or my whatever, you know, target audience, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. Sparkness for everything was another idea, right? So, you know, just, you know, tell me about blah, right? Like this paper, right? You know, academic paper, like, what does it say? Or tell me about this book, right?
Yeah.
And then we combine it with other things like audio and video transcribing, you know, so then you can, yeah, like basically everything is going to be sort of machine readable, right? Like, you know, 2 hour long, you know, podcasts or YouTube videos, you know, can be fed into this thing, right? And then it can just give you the sparkness for it, right?
Yeah.
I think like a really interesting one is coding, right? Like computer coders, right?
Yeah.
And so even though they weren't designed to write software and to code, it just, they were able to do it, right? Just based on all the stuff that was fed to them. So it's an example of what these researchers call emergent behavior, right?
Yeah.
You know, the behavior just emerged from, you know, like what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so now you can pretty much like build like websites and apps just by giving, you know, them basic instructions. So you don't even need to code yourself, right?
Yeah.
Or you can actually be a really useful sort of adjunct. You know, if you're a coder, you know, you can ask them to sort of check, you know, your code, right, for problems or whatever, right? Give them further suggestions.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been like a really kind of interesting one.
So basically, are you saying like in terms of jobs that ChatGPT could make obsolete, one of the soonest is actually a computer programmer?
Maybe, and we'll get to that. That's definitely, that's part of the thing that I'm going to get us to think about.
Okay. Now,
Dan. So yeah, you are a foreshadowing.
All right.
What are my plans for this episode? But yeah, I over to you, Dan. So you know how, we've chatted about ChatGPT a little bit, you know, on and off. And like, have you been using it for anything? Like, I think you were telling me about some, example use cases.
Yeah. I mean, one evening, some friends and I were just messing around, like, I think pretty much everyone who's heard of it, and because anyone can create a free account and play around with it. There's the obvious fun stuff is just to give it absurd prompts and see what it comes up with. Like, write me a song about riding on a hot air balloon and somehow include enchiladas or something like that, right? But interestingly, I have known pastors who use ChatGPT to get their sermon started. And I think this goes back to your third point about how it's useful in getting creatively unstuck. So one of my pastor friends said that they won't write a good sermon, but what they have is like infinitely better than starting with a blank page. And like you said, like it's better to have something on the page. And at best you can tweak it, or at worst you can say, this is garbage, I need to start over. But now like I've got grist for the mill, so to speak, or I've got the concepts flowing in my brain, you know? Yeah. And incidentally, I did remember my friend sent me a bit of ChatGPT's response to his prompt, write me a sermon on 1 Peter chapter 1. And I read about 3 or 4 paragraphs of it, and I thought to myself, man, this sermon's written like a pop song. Like, it's just produced for wide appeal. Like, the vibe I got was just, it's here not to offend anyone. So it won't, like, it's good. It won't say anything wrong, but it's not going to say anything gripping or, you know, like, makes you think or whatever either.
Because if you think about it, it's kind of like, you know, the mean of everyone on Earth or something, right? Or of all internet users, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not going to be particularly sharp in any way, right? It's kind of just like, very, very average, but, you know, not in a bad way, but just, you know, that it is what it is, right? An average human. But I remember, like, didn't you tell me that you asked it, like, something about, like, how pastors might be taken over by AI? That was an interesting one.
Yes. So it was part of that night we were messing around. I think I asked it, what did I ask? Please explain to me exactly how AI will take over my job as a Christian minister. And it was really interesting because it gave, I thought, a very reasoned response.
Yeah.
So it said, AI systems are designed to automate tasks and process, but they cannot replace the human element that a Christian minister provides. And it's exactly said what we were talking about. Like, It can automate certain clerical tasks such as sermon prep and sermon delivery, but it cannot replace personal relationships that a minister wow. must build with their congregation and provide pastoral care. And I'm like, yo, AI, like, this is exactly right, but it's so scary that you can tell me that and I can feel better. Like, what if it was just saying that in order to lull me into a false sense of security, and then before I know it, I'm out of a job. But
I mean, yeah, that's the good news, right? AI will not be able to take over your job as a Christian minister. Like, that's the first sentence. Isn't that great?
But that's exactly what an AI would say if it felt like I was on the verge of deleting it or something. But anyway, point is, it's right. At this stage, at this current stage, it can help me write a sermon, but it's not going to, we're far from a robot, you know, looking someone in the eye and comforting a dying person or understanding someone who's going through divorce or something like that, right? Like, that is a personal touch. And if AI is like the average of everyone on earth or everyone on the internet, that's the opposite of what you want comforting you. So
yeah, it's interesting. So we've kind of talked a bit about, you know, what is ChatGPT, what can it do, what it can't do. But in the next segment, we're going to talk about, speculate upon, you know, what is to come, right? And, you know, does the near future hold?
Yes. How exciting.
Okay, Dan, we're going to do something a little bit different for this segment. So, you know, I've been sort of taking the lead on preparing this particular episode, right? The show notes and the research and the prep. So I did do some thinking. Obviously, you know, when you're trying to immerse yourself in this topic, you know, you have your own opinions, right? Speculations. I've come up with four scenarios. You know, they're not that so that original, but you know, I try to kind of add my own thoughts there. Sure. But basically, four scenarios of what I think, you know, AI could do to us and to society, right? And we're gonna play a little game, which I totally stole from another podcast in the MBA sphere. But these two hosts, they play this game every now and then called "That's True," "That Might Be True," or "That's Ridiculous." Okay, so basically, you know, it's like a prospect or something that might happen. You know, do you think it's true? Yeah. Or might be true, or is totally, you know, not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think the other sort of parameter to this game is, obviously we're not going to think too far in the future because, you know, who knows what's going to happen, right? But just literally in, you know, a very imminent time. So within the timeline of our kids, right, and their childhood, you know. So when Abby is still in primary school, right? Because she's not even in primary school yet, right? She's sort of in the last year of preschool. Yeah. Or like Eva, so she's in year one. That's my oldest. Even like within the next 3, 4, 5 years, when they're still in primary school, like I think some, you know, big things might happen, right? So in the context of that, right? Okay. And for our listeners, like Dan has no idea what I'm gonna give to him. So this will be live reactions.
And just so you know, just so everyone knows, I'm known as someone who has pretty strong beliefs, but in stuff like predicting the future, and sports is a good example of this because, like you said, you got this from an NBA podcast. If I was playing this with like NFL or NBA, like Tom Brady will unretire, like my answer will always be hell if I know, but I'll do my best to make it interesting. So like, I'll try to have a stronger opinion on whatever you throw at me.
Yeah, just play it to the audience. All right, scenario one. Disruption in white-collar jobs as AI replace or significantly change wide segments of quote-unquote knowledge work. Okay, so that's the one-sentence summary.
Yeah.
But a bit more background. So I think, you know, it's not a new kind of idea, right? And we even sort of talked about it briefly in the previous segment, you know, this idea of AI just getting so good at certain things, right, that some jobs will get like replaced or transformed.
Sure.
Right. So basically, you know, anything that's requiring a lot of rote work, you know, so kind of low levels of creativity, you know, or autonomy, right? So if you're just like doing data entry, if you're just summarizing things, just tabulating, proofreading, right? So yep. A lot of those kind of like data entry jobs, secretaries, accountants, like junior lawyers, you know, all they do is just kind of review documents all day, right? Yep. Like that, I think it's going to come, well, a time when AI is going to be able to do it, you know, as good, if not better, faster, cheaper, yep. Right? That kind of idea.
Yep.
What do you make of it, Dan?
Yeah,
is it okay. True, might be true, or that's ridiculous?
I think you maybe have given me an easy one to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like pretty confident in saying that's true or pretty likely. And here's my reasoning. So 2 points. One is, we already said, like a lot of white-collar information jobs are actually pretty repetitive. They're like kind of like the computer or the Excel equivalent of making the pair of shoes day after day after day, right?
Yep.
So this is like the AI, this is the revolution that factories and the industrialization was for, like a clockmaker in the 17th century or whatever. But my second reason is this, and it's a little bit broader. I think the last few years, one of the things the pandemic has shown us is actually just how fragile the white collar world is. I know this isn't exactly the same. I'm just thinking analogously, right? But like the idea of how not being able to go into the office has so completely transformed and morphed the look of office work. So how if a disease could do that, like how much more so could AI? So that's my thinking.
Yeah. And just a few sort of quotes that I got from, you know, like these articles, right? So one person that was interviewed for this New York Times piece, he goes, it's the equivalent of a very well-read intern, right? ChatGPT. They might not have the experience to know how to apply it, but they know all the words, they've read all the books, and they're able to get part of the way there, right? So it's quite interesting because, you know, on the one hand, you know, a lot of the kind of junior, you know, people doing the rote work, right, may get replaced, right, or, you know, sort of made redundant in terms of what they do. But there's another angle to it, which is actually ChatGPT, you know, and, you know, Microsoft Copilot, whatever it becomes, right, can actually, you know, benefit workers because it allows them to become more productive, right? So it might do kind of the menial stuff for them, right, or kind of enhance what they do. But that's also sort of interesting because if every worker becomes more productive, then like by definition, you need fewer workers to be able to complete the task, right? Yeah. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. It's either the AI is so good to replace jobs or the AI is going to boost existing jobs so much that you won't need as many, you know, new workers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, yeah, overall, I tend to agree with you. I think that's probably true. Although, you know, I think, like, you know, in every case, in every sort of technology revolution, there's always going to be like new jobs, right? And new things that are created out of the new paradigm. You know, it's never like, oh yeah, you know, the steam engine came and, you know, like all the like manual kind of whatever production was just lost.
That's true.
Everyone was out of a job, you know, people just get new jobs. But so yeah, who knows what's going to happen?
I think like while we're speculating, I feel like going further along this line of thought, what you might end up with is an elite few who can outthink an AI and who are still in it, but widely, massively other human beings kind of being replaced. And then their lives might not get worse, but then they'll be more deprived of meaning. And
it's almost like an internet dynamic, right, that gets applied to the real world, right, which is... you know, look, and we've talked about this, the idea of power law, right? Where, like, very, like, a lot of output is done by, like, a small number of people, right? Whether, you know, you look at, like, you know, YouTube online creators, right?
Yeah.
There's a few accounts that are, you know, getting the most impressions, right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's YouTube, TikTok, whatever. It just, you know, the internet just does that, right? It sort of elevates the few, the cream of the crop, right? Dominant players in the market. Then you have like a whole tail of like, you know, little mini, you know, creators, right? And then in the middle, it's kind of just hollowed out, right? So will this AI being applied to, you know, jobs also to have a similar effect.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, so that's number one. That was a softball one, Dan.
I figured. Thank you.
All right, next one. Scenario two. School and university curriculum overhauled, right? So school and university, the way that teaching and learning happens, it will be transformed. Okay, so a bit more explanation.
Okay.
You know, when calculators were, you know, invented, right? Like modern day calculators, right? For maths. Then that kind of changed the way that you would teach and assess maths, right? Like, it's all about, you know, how you would work things out, you know, rather than getting the right answer, because you didn't just, you know, tap, you know, the buttons to make the right answer, right?
Yeah.
And basically, ChatGPT or AI is like a calculator, but just for every field of study.
Yeah.
Right. So, when you can go to ChatGPT and just put in whatever essay question, right? Any kind of assignment, you know, like any kind of ask, right? That the teacher, you know, a traditional sort of homework or exam would give you, right?
Yep.
You can just spit out the answer. Yep. So that kind of traditional way of doing things, right, becomes untenable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's examples of like universities and schools like already responding to this, you know, so in different continents, different countries, like banning ChatGPT, like there's government schools in, I think, at least 5 Australian states now that ban ChatGPT, you know, for use on this like school network, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very sort of reactive sort of thing. I do get the sort of concern, but what do you think, Dan? Is it true? It might be true, or that's ridiculous.
Okay. Well, with this one, I still feel pretty confident and that it's true, or at least extremely likely. Mm-hmm. Again, because it's already happening, right? Like, so there's, like you said, like, whether you ban it or embrace it, you have to choose. You have to react to if you're an educator, right? So in a sense, like, you can't, it's like the premise of our episode. It's here, you can't ignore it. What are you going to do, right? So there's that. And also, I can't help but notice, so before you said in scenario one, when the steam engine was invented, like some people were put out of a job, but then other people got new jobs that hadn't been there before. And so in a sense, like we kind of normalized after a while. And same thing for calculators. Like
reach a new equilibrium.
Yeah, that's right. Like, and before and after calculators, math and the study of it still goes on, right? So by that analogy, AI or generative AI is going to rock the educational world, but there will be some sort of settling down into equilibrium at some point. And might I say, I feel like that's not a very toothy prediction. Like that's a pretty harmless, like pretty easy one to accept. But I guess maybe like the question, I wonder the question behind the question would be like, will that ultimately be a good thing or bad thing? Like, will damage be done or will it overall be really great?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I sort of you know, read of some, you know, people's responses so far, right? So aside from just banning it, like what else can you do, right? And so, you know, there's people who are thinking more creatively. So it's, you know, it's actually a great tool for teachers, right, and academics, because you can now prepare lesson plans and do things in a much more efficient way yourselves, right? So that's one thing. Again, to the whole point about these creative prompts, right? You know, you could get a discussion going, right? Just generate sort of 5, you know, conversation starters, right, for the class, that kind of thing. What other academics have been doing is asking students to hand in the papers at different stages of the writing process. So it's almost like a show your work for writing, right? In the same way that you would show your work for maths, even though you can get the right answer, right? But what is the process that you took to get there, right? So I thought that was pretty interesting. Again, sort of leveraging something that ChatGPT is already good at, which is how can you kind of get it to teach students, right? Yeah. Simplify the topic, you know, provide feedback, you know, on their work, but also to sharpen their critical thinking, because ChatGPT is imperfect, right? And it will generate sort of false arguments and false references and things like that. You know? So it can actually be a way for, you can use it to get an answer, but now you have to use your own human thinking, right, to pick apart that answer,
yeah,
right, and figure out what's right, what's wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think to your point, it's here, we have to deal with it. And one of, this article that was talking about it, right, basically the author goes, the barricade has fallen. Tools like ChatGPT aren't going anywhere. Yeah. They're only going to improve, and barring some major regulatory intervention, this particular form of machine intelligence is now a fixture of our society.
Yeah.
Right. I think it is a bit jarring, though, because it's like, you know, we know teachers, right? And, you know, your sister-in-law is a teacher, mm-hmm. like, you know, my brother-in-law is a teacher. And so they have to deal with it now. They're going to have to be discussing this, right, in the faculties,
yeah.
right? And for, I don't know, 2023 is already sort of, you know, well underway, but like 2024, there has to be like changes, right?
Yeah.
To how you teach every subject, you know, like that's going to have to happen.
And so that raises another question, which I guess we've been kind of bouncing around, which is the pace of it, right? So
yes,
I think maybe it would be, you conceivably, if ChatGPT took, say, 20 years from the start of the project to its first launch, right? Or between versions, it was a few years instead of literally a few months. Like, that'd be enough time for, because human society moves slow to write policy,
yes.
to understand implications, to work out the knock-on effects, that all that sort of thing, the consequences. And I think that the danger, the indisputable danger, is that it's developing too fast for, like, society as an organism.
Too big to absorb it.
Yeah, yeah. And so maybe it'll all work out in the end, but will a lot of people get hurt between that? Like, will a lot of kids use it to cheat instead of to learn, right?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Well, we know that, like, our children are not going to be, you know, coming out through school the same way that we came up through school, right?
That's right.
And the way that we came up through school is probably at least on, you know, similar to the way that, you know, things were happening for decades, right? And, but now it's like, yeah, totally whole new world.
And another thing I thought of, and like, not to go too deep into it, but because ChatGPT is like a text predictive model, so its sort of essence is around information, right? The shuffling words and ideas and concepts around, but information is one thing, and it's one, you might even say, the primary purpose of education, right? But what does it say about value formation? So values, like, oughts are different to is, right? You ought to, or you ought not to. Like, what place does AI have in teaching that, rather than, oh, here's what happens in 1776, or here's how you take up, you know, how you multiply numbers together or whatever.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it's kind of like, yeah, what is the purpose of education, right? Like, schooling and also universities, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we went from universities as, like, you know, bastions of whatever, like,
whole person
formation, the whole person, yeah, right? Yeah. And then it's a much more technocratic sort of, you know, we prepare people for the modern economy, right? And STEM and whatever, you know, and yeah, like, different purposes, which, yeah, will be impacted in different ways by ChatGPT.
Yeah.
All right. Third scenario. Okay, this one goes a bit broader. So far, 2 for 2, right? We think that's true. ChatGPT will actually, wreak some, you know, important changes.
So you've gone into the future, scenario, you've seen which ones are true and which ones aren't.
not quite. But yeah, so scenario 3. Her will be real life. And by her, I mean the movie Her.
Ah, yes. Yep.
Okay. And so just to give our listeners a brief sort of synopsis, right? So it's a movie that was released sort of, I think, early 2010s, something like that.
Yeah.
I think in hindsight, actually quite a visionary movie. But so basically, the premise is in a near future Los Angeles, so Theodore Twombly, he's played by Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah. So he's a lonely, introverted man who works for a business that has professional writers compose letters for people who are unable to write letters of a personal nature themselves. Depressed because of his impending divorce from his childhood sweetheart, Catherine, Theodore purchased an operating system upgrade for his devices that includes a virtual assistant with artificial intelligence designed to adapt and evolve. He decides that he wants AI to have a feminine voice, and she names herself Samantha. And I'm adding here that it's in the alluring sort of breathy voice of Scarlett Johansson, right? So that kind of adds another dimension to it. And Theodore is fascinated by her ability to learn and grow psychologically. They bond over discussions about love and life, including Theodore's reluctance to sign his divorce papers. Okay. So this artificial intelligence that is with you, right, that is personalized, that sort of can have these quite deep conversations with you, right? It's with you wherever you go. You might, in a dystopian world, like develop, you know, feelings or, you know, like, yeah. What do you think? It's true, it might be true, or that's ridiculous.
Okay, I've got a clarifying question, right? So, great movie, by the way, loved it. I think is, the question is, are you asking me whether people will eventually turn to generative AIs for, so let's say, emotional closeness and social bonding, like treat them as other people in order to sort of fill a hole, like an emotional void or something? And are you asking me whether that fact is going to happen in the future, or whether that's going to happen and it'll happen positively, like AI will contribute positively to people's mental health and stuff?
I think, yeah, it's a good clarifying question. I think I'm more just talking about the technology itself, right? And you having a personalized AI with you wherever you go.
Okay.
And then there's going to be all these knock-on effects, right? Such as, you know, developing a relationship. But yeah, what do you think of that happening?
Okay, I'm surprising myself here, but I kind of feel like I want to go hard and say that's true. Like I would rate that as highly likely. And once again, it's because I have been picking up bits and pieces in the news about people doing this already. So I strike out when it comes to real humans. So can I, can I turn to AI to just say nice things to me and to respond to me and to, this sounds really sad, but to treat me like a human being, you know, and have a conversation with me and react humanly to the human things that I say and then say human things back. And I know it's happening already. And the reason why I asked your question is because because in the movie Her, it ended up being almost sort of like an optimistic painting, like where she actually does, ScarJo's OS does end up providing some therapeutic catharsis to the Joaquin Phoenix's character. But in real life, it's, at least currently, it just feels a bit sick and twisted. And
So I don't know if you've heard of that quote from this technologist, something like, the future is already here, but it's just unevenly distributed, right? So this idea of like people talking to AI and building a relationship with them, that is happening or has happened. I don't know if you've heard of this company called Replica with a K.
No, I'm afraid.
Okay, so there's this recent news about this. So basically, Replica was this messaging app where users are able to sort of build a digital library of information about themselves, right? You know, going back to the neural network idea. So you build up information about yourself, right? And then that's run through a neural network, and then it creates a bot, you know, that's personalized to you, right? And then you can have conversations with the bot, you know? So, and then what happened was that, you know, users would actually got hooked on that, you know, and because they'll be having very lifelike conversations, right? With the bot, you know, to the point where, you know, they're developing feelings and, you know, and all that. Then there was this feature called erotic roleplay, ERP.
Okay.
Right? And so where if you paid this subscription, there's this feature that was unlocked and you could then do like sexting, flirting, you know, erotic wardrobe stuff, right? And then for some reason, in February 2023 of this year, the company removed the ability to do the adult content. Right. And they're significantly like they've turned down the dial on the personalities of its AI. Right. So suddenly, you know, the bot that people were talking to and developing feelings about just got lobotomized. Right. And there was this whole uproar like on Reddit that like, many people like reporting that, you know, they were rejected and deeply hurt by what happened. Right.
Wow.
So, And so is it, that's sort of here. That's sort of, you know, still a centralized sort of system. Right. Where this company, you know, rolled out the product, you know, rolled out the technology, people used it, but they were able to then sort of turn the technology on and off, right?
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is when, you know, the large language models, which are currently, you know, very large and very expensive, right? Just through the march of progress, you know, it's going to get smaller and more efficient, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be able to run on our phones, right? Like, that's just almost, it's inevitable, you know? So what happens then when you do have a decentralized sort of AI bot, right, on your phone, you know, and it's sort of having conversations, it knows you intimately, right? It knows every detail of all your calendars, right, all your notes and everything that you fed it, right? And this is my sort of speculation, right? But like, what happens to like childhood, you know, if people, you know, who are quite young, but you know, let's say whatever, 10, 11, 12, right, they have a phone and now they just have an ever present like virtual friend with them at all times, right? What happens to romance and coupling, you know, so we're in this loneliness crisis. You mentioned, Dan, like people were already seeking solace in the digital world, right?
Yeah.
And this AI can be extremely human-like and be able to be like whoever you want it to be, right?
Yeah.
And even just like from a religion and spirituality perspective, it's almost like you have this oracle. You have this oracle in your pocket and they can sort of like, you know, tell you what you need to know. They can give you advice on how to live your life. And in a certain sense, they are a bit mysterious. You know, they're sort of like this kind of sentient thing, right, in this black box. You know?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a little bit like having your own personal, like, oracle with you. Like, and you know, I think it's another episode, right, to talk about the theological implications of AI, right, which I think we already made some notes about. But, yeah, but, like, that's all just swirling in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is, like, it's so big, you know, but I think it's going to happen. It's like the technology is here to make it happen in the next 5 years.
Yeah. And here's just another scenario I just thought of. And I think the emphasis is that this is just one drop in the ocean of implications that we haven't even begun to reason with, right? So what if that happened in her situation? You've got this pocket supercomputer that's this AI that talks to you and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, hello, AI. I'm about to go for my job interview. Can you please pray for me? What does that mean? Like, can AI pray for you? Like, will God hear that? Like, holy cow. Like, and it will do a good job because, look, in my line of work, I've heard some pretty bad prayers. And I guarantee you ChatGPT can do a better job than a lot of people. So, and the whole point is, that's just one what if, right? And this whole thing I can't wrap my head around is it's moving so fast and it's developing so quickly that there's just billions and billions of what ifs and we don't have enough time to think it all through to evaluate whether this is a good idea or not.
Okay, so Dan, usually I'm pretty ambitious with my notes, right? And you always say, oh, we're going to run out of time. I'm like, no worry, we're not going to run out of time. But this time I think you're actually right. There's just so much to say on this topic. I'm just going to sort of,
move on. Should we finish up, or you want to do skip scenario four, or should we just...
Yeah, yes. I do have one more scenario, but I just want to go to like some takeaways now, right? Like what to make of this, and then I'll throw it over to you for an ending.
Sure.
But so, again, these are sort of like my preliminary thoughts, and also to provoke thought in our listeners, right? So I guess that the first takeaway is, it's all happening at a breathtaking pace, right? It's almost a little bit like in the beginning of 2020, it's like, oh yeah, what's this kind of virus that's, you know, locking down Wuhan, right? And then, but everywhere else it was normal. The world was normal, right? And then suddenly everything changed, right? And it's like, oh, you know, ChatGPT, you know, pretty interesting, right? Many applications. But I think, within a short span, things are going to change a lot, right? I'm also torn because there's some things that just won't change, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, of a common theme that we talk about in our episodes, which is that we are embodied creatures living in physical space, you know? So an AI, you know, until and unless they, you know, are able to build in the real world, right, an army of bots or something, you know, like they're always going to be, you know, in the digital realm, right? And so AI can help us with medical research, you know, but it still takes people to do the clinical trials, right? Yeah. Like if you're going to, they can create the medicine, but we have to test it to make sure it's effective and safe, right? So that it still has to be done. And then producing the vaccines or the medicine and distributing them, right? Yeah. That's still the task of the real world, right? Yeah. And, you know, AI can sort of now dominate the cyberspace. I think it's really interesting that once it becomes so human-like, you know, what are we going to make of all these online interactions with so-called strangers, right? What if they're just a bot, really convincing bot? You know, I think it's going to be harder and harder to tell, right? But at the end of the day, like, you know, we still unplug, we still touch grass, you know, as the young people say it, right? and, you know, at the end of the day, like, a mother still needs to nurse their baby, right? If you're an athlete, you know, NBA finals is coming soon or playoffs, you still need to be able to run and jump and catch a ball, right? That doesn't change, you know? We still need to, like, perform all of our physical functions. That doesn't change, right? If you're sick and old or vulnerable, you still need someone to care for you, right? Like, maybe, like, you can have an AI that makes you feel less lonely, but who's going to sort of feed you and give you your, you know, like, physical care, right?
Oh, I guess a counterpoint to this, though, is I see what you mean, but then, all right, just going back to the fact that AI originated as a sci-fi premise, right? There are plenty of sci-fi premises that challenge that very assumption that humans will always be physical. So case in point, probably the biggest example in our lifetimes would be The Matrix, right? Like, to be a brain in the jar. And yes, and I think the thing we've learned about AI is things that seem absurd and we're not going to get to for years and even decades. Oh, guess what? A few months' time, it's here or whatever, right? So I no longer have that faith that being human will always be physical. So, or not 100% faith. Maybe I'm 80% like, yeah, that's common sense. But 20% of me is like, no, I don't want to get fooled again.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, and not just a human thing, but just like at a societal level, right? But the reason why, like, I'm maybe a bit more sanguine is that society still progresses based on flesh and steel, right? And atoms and energy, right? Going to, you know, the fire thing from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, the way that we generate energy, right? Climate change, all that, like, that's, you know, a big consequential thing that's happening in the world, right?
Yeah.
And if we're going to move to, like, you know, renewables and batteries and build transmission lines, you know, like, become a zero carbon society, right?
Yeah.
That happens through building stuff, right? And, like, making stuff out of stuff that we dig out of the ground, right? Yeah. Like that. So the AI, you know, can do stuff in the digital world, right? To really change humans, right? But then the progress that we make as a society, right, still depends on physical stuff happening, right?
Yeah.
But then I guess, like, I turn it back around the other way, and actually, you know, the stuff that happens, like, I've been talking about, like, the hardware of society, right? Like, you know, all the stuff that, you know, of steel and buildings and all that. Yeah. But then, well, what about the software of society, right? Like, the way that we communicate, interact, you know, organize ourselves, right? It's through language. I think this is where, like, I'm more kind of convinced by some of the sort of people raising fears, right? Yeah. So there was this really interesting New York Times op-ed article from these social commentators, right, about why it is a danger. And so, and I just want to read a quote because I think it's really fascinating, right? So they say, "In the beginning was a word. Language is the operating system of human culture. From language emerges myth and law, gods and money, art and science, friendships and nations and computer code. AI's new mastery of language means it can now hack and manipulate the operating system of civilization. By gaining mastery of language, AI is seizing the master key to civilization, from bank vaults to holy sepulchres. Yeah. What would it mean for humans to live in a world where a large percentage of stories, melodies, images, laws, policies and tools are shaped by non-human intelligence, which knows how to exploit with superhuman efficiency the weaknesses, biases, and addictions of the human mind, while knowing how to form intimate relationships with human beings. In games like chess, no human can hope to beat a computer. What happens when the same thing occurs in art, politics, or religion?"
Yep, so that's beautifully written in. It's dangerous and terrible. Oh, sorry. It's it's beautiful and terrifying. It's beautifully and terrifying. And I feel like that example kind of shows. So there's this assumption that there's the hardware and the software of society, or even of of the self, right? There's my hardware, my thinking, my information, and there's my body, my physical. But I wonder if that kind of vision sort of shows that it's an artificial distinction, right? Because what do our bodies do if we just end up, if we were just sitting around listening to artificially generated music and, you know, like, so that's one thing. And the second is, I thought of, I'm also not willing to say that the physical world is, or like physical technology isn't going to very quickly catch up, especially if AI itself accelerates technology or technological progression, right? Yeah. So there's those videos of Boston Dynamics and what it did in the early 2000s, and now like it had this big thing, like they're trying to create like how humans walk or whatever, and now they've got robots that can leap and do parkour and stuff. And anyway, I just feel like, I guess where I'm, to be contrarian, I'm just wondering if,
you're on the zag.
Like, some things never change. Is it, is that true? Like,
Yes. Yeah. And I think like we had something in the show notes about Ecclesiastes, right? Like, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. So like, to some extent, yeah, it is not new in sort of humans pursuing, you know, technology and mastery, right? And power to be godlike, you know, and the consequences of that, right? But then, yeah, like I think something is happening, something is changing that's like qualitatively different to what's happened, you know, in previous generations, right? In previous civilizations. I know, I can't help feeling that way. But Dan, I'm going to throw it over to you to finish.
Okay, so I guess the, like we said before, the premise of this episode is kind of just to make a statement, which is that AI is here and there's no ignoring it, but
it's going to change things.
Yeah, it's going to change things. But I wonder if, and in terms of just the last thought to leave our listeners as we finish up, I wonder if we want, it would be good to actually raise that question. So we've gone this far. We're in version 4 of ChatGPT, and there's no economic or material incentive for us to slow down anytime soon. But I just want to ask the question of whether it's not too late to put the genie back into the bottle. And the reason why is because as Christians, the way we think about building is that we don't build without purpose. There is, so the, for all the way back in the book of Genesis, the reason we have this creational instinct or this natural propensity to take earth and rock and turn it into buildings is because we were created by a creator God who created us in his image. God built and then said, hey, now you guys, I want you to take over the family business. Now you go build and fill the earth with your image. And I guess all this goes back to the idea that we do this actually out of a spiritual mandate from God that he has put into the DNA of every single human being, because we are all created in his image. And along with that comes responsibilities, comes moral structure. And in scripture, there are plenty of examples of times when people build when they shouldn't have. And probably the most archetypal example of this, and credit to you, Chong, because you're the one who got me thinking about this, would be the Tower of Babel, which once again comes in the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Bible. Shortly after the fall, some people got together and said, hey, why don't we build a tower to the heavens? And if we do so, we'll make a statement, which is that no one can topple us. No one can be higher than us. And they did. And as the legend goes, God took notice and didn't like where this was going, and he struck them with a disease, and the disease that he struck them with was language difficulties, which, as I'm talking now, there's a lot of thematic connections to our subject, isn't it? So what God said was, you have let hubris and pride take over your drive for building. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to confuse your words so that when you say something, your neighbor won't understand. And when he says something to you, you won't understand because now you're all talking in different languages. And now we're here at this point where we're creating something that can sort of master language on its own. And so I wonder, you take this all together, and I guess as a final thought, do we need to build this? Should we build this? And I think I've made it plenty clear throughout this episode that I'm quite scared of this technology, and mainly because of how fast it's moving. I can't envision what it's going to do to life in 2024, 2025, so to speak. But even just its very concept of building a thinking thing that is not a human being. Like, we shouldn't, don't mess with human brains. It's sacred. Don't mess with thought. Don't mess with reason. Don't mess with the word, with logos. That's sacred. Don't mess with the word with which God created us and spoke the universe into existence. It's sacred. And with that question raised, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Yes, and I think we're ripe for a sequel, Dan, to this topic, because, yeah, it's there's so much, and the whole sort of just because you can doesn't mean you should. That was a whole other section of what I had planned to cover, but we're not going to have time. But yes, to be continued, Dan.
Yes, let's do to be continued soon. Let's aspire to that.
All right. We've come to the end of this episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you want to connect with us, we are on Instagram and Twitter. At InGoodFaithFM. You can also email us with any thoughts and questions to ingoodfaithmail@gmail.com. And if you like what you heard, please tell a friend. It would be great to build up a community of listeners who engage issues and ideas in good faith. And if you love what you heard, you can also support us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts and I believe Spotify as well. If you can search for In Good Faith, just find us and yeah, give us a rating and review. And maybe leave us some kind words. We'd really appreciate it. All right, Dan. It's great to get back with you again. Good to see you today as well.
Same with you, man. Yeah, it's really great to be back. Let's do part 2 soon, huh?
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Yeah. Good night.